Hi, this is Pastor Matt, and you're listening to the Lakeside Church Weekly Message Podcast. This is where we broadcast our Sunday morning teaching, so if you missed it or want to hear it again, you're in the right place. Every week, we try to teach God's Word in a way that is real so that it becomes alive to you as you hear it. If this message speaks to you in any way, let us know by clicking on our website's contact page at lakesidelife.org, where you can find out more about the church, watch some videos, and even give online. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the podcast.
I don't know if you remember this. I don't remember this because I was not born yet. So there you go. But some of you might remember this. There was this thing that happened one time on the Johnny Carson show. And I used to read about it in Uncle John's Bathroom Reader. So that's where I get my information for my sermons. It was really interesting. Johnny Carson, one day, how the whole thing started was there was this congressman. I wrote his name down, Harold V. Froelich. And the pretentiousness of just making sure that your name has your initial in it every time somebody says it. But anyway, Harold V. Froelich, a 41-year-old Republican congressman, he put out a press release warning the public about there was some pulp shortage or something with wood and stuff like this. And he was talking about how we're probably going to have a shortage in toilet paper. And Johnny Carson picked up on this, his staff. And so, have you heard about this? Okay. You know how I don't do a good Johnny Carson impersonation, but he says, I'm not going to try it. Never mind. There's going to be a shortage, I'm not kidding, about toilet paper. And of course, this was all just kind of built up. You know, one guy suggested it could happen. He then had to clarify he was only talking about commercial paper, because what happened was there was a mad rush to the supermarkets, and it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. And for like 6 weeks, there was no toilet paper on the grocery store shelves or something like this. Okay, so some of you guys may remember that. I guess my nearest experience with that type of hysteria might have been more something around Y2K. Okay, remember those couple years leading up, what's really going to happen, and the mass hysteria that happened. I remember watching a Michael Moore movie. So you know where I get my sermon material. I remember watching a Michael Moore movie, and it was one of those ones where he's talking about 9/11 or something. But they're showing some real live news clips following 9/11, and there was companies that put out products like for parachutes that you could jump out of a building with, their short throw parachutes and stuff like this. You know, the hysteria that happens when somebody suggests that something in their life is about to end or could end, or there's a possibility that it might. The hysteria that happens when we can't predict the future, but somebody tells us what might happen in the future, is just kind of silly sometimes. But yet we find Jesus talking about the future in Matthew 24. And so it's with that as kind of an intro that I want to get into this. And this is the end of the world as we know it. How to prepare for Christ's return through confident, obedient living. And so let's just start reading. I'm not going to read the whole passage and then go back, because there's like 51 verses, okay? We'll read as we go. And so Matthew 24, starting at verse 1. As Jesus left and was going out of the temple complex, his disciples came up and called his attention to the temple buildings. And then he replied to them, "Don't you see all these things?" Picture him gesturing toward the temple, right? "I assure you, not one stone will be left here on another that will not be thrown down." And while he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples approached him privately and said, "Tell us, when will these things happen? And what is the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" They ask him this. And so they've already got the bug. They've heard enough. He's hinted at this stuff enough. They're probably talking in private. You know, what do you think he means when he starts saying these things? So finally, they got him alone. They're on a mountainside. It's talking time. It's a little small group hour. What are you really? Can you just tell us in plain English what's really going to happen? And so I've got a number of things to get through. Jesus starts out just by way of keeping score of where we are in the passage. Here's five things you need to not do, okay, to prepare for the future. The first one, really, really important. Then Jesus replied to them, "Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Messiah,' and they will deceive many. You're going to hear of wars and rumors of wars." Okay, so here's a Messiah who knows. The number one thing, if you're really concerned about when I'm coming back, the number one thing is just make sure you're not deceived. Okay, make sure that you're not taken in by people who have suggested that they have figured out maybe when-ish Christ is coming back. Nobody knows that, okay? Don't be deceived by these people who are false messiahs. You're going to hear wars, and I think that's interesting, rumors of wars. You're going to hear about these things, but don't be deceived. The second thing is this, don't be alarmed. Look at this next verse. See that you are not alarmed, because these things must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise up against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these events are the beginning of birth pains. Now, I find this to be a little contradictory. He says, don't be alarmed. It's going to get real bad. I mean, that's the way it sounds, okay? You're going to have all these things happen. But I think the point is that you're going to hear these things. These are outside of your control. It's maybe the subtle undertones are, I'm still with you. I'm just letting you know. Maybe take confidence in this that I'm telling you ahead of time so that when they happen, you're not alarmed by it, that Jesus said this would happen. Now, this is specifically for the disciples, okay? Because they're about to go through much of what he's talking about. I want to make sure I'm really clear this morning that when Jesus talks about these things, he's not talking about some 21st century nuclear war. Okay, Jesus is talking to the disciples about events that are going to happen in their time and in the next 100 years or so. Okay, he's talking about events that are very, very near. But this is still good instruction for us because we are still awaiting the second coming of Christ. Okay, and it's still good instruction for us 2,000 years later. I just want to make sure that when we read these things, some of these specifics, we leave them in the first century and we take out the theology and we take out the teaching, the sort of high-level teaching from them without trying to take the actual application and put it in our 21st century context, okay? He's talking about things that are actually going to happen. So he says, don't be frightened. Don't be consumed by it. Don't let it consume your thoughts, okay? The third thing is this. Don't lose your faith. So verse 9, he says, then they will hand you over for persecution, and they will kill you. You will be hated by all nations because of my name. Then many will take offense, betray one another, and hate one another. Many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. Here's that deception thing again, and we're going to hit it again in two more points. But lawlessness will multiply. The love of many will grow cold, but the one who endures to the end will be delivered. This good news of the kingdom will be proclaimed in all the world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. A lot of stuff there, and that middle portion then. He starts talking about how many are going to take offense, and they're going to start to betray one another. All these hardships are going to happen. And what you guys are personally going to see is people are going to start betraying one another. I have to think here that he's talking about they're actually going to see this even within their church, among their brethren. This is going to be a time where there's really going to be a weeding out of the faithful in that sense. Persecution's really going to put it to them, right? And he says, lawlessness will multiply. The love of many will grow cold. But he says, the one who endures to the end will be delivered. He's basically saying this. Don't let trials change you. Don't lose your testimony. Character, I remember one of our first pastors here, he had this little saying on his monitor. And it said, character is who you are when no one's looking. And I want to add to that. Character is who you are when times get tough. Okay, character is who you are when times get tough. It's really easy to be good and faithful to our spouse and everything when we live in the kind of context that we do. We all, make good livings and are able to provide for our family. We don't have the stress that some people around the world do. I wonder where we would be. I wonder how much our marriages would hold up if we had the kind of stresses that war and persecution and famine actually put on a family. And we'd really find out what our character is, right? So character is who you are when things go wrong. And Jesus' message is to persevere through tragedy. The only good thing he's given them so far is that I am telling you ahead of time. That's kind of a subtle hint to so you'll know that I'm still in this. Okay, I'm still very much a part of this, but this is what's coming. The fourth thing is this. Don't be caught off guard. Don't be caught off guard. So when you see, he says in verse 15, so when you see the abomination that causes desolation, remember that for a second, spoken of by the prophet Daniel, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then those in Judea must flee to the mountains. A man on the housetop must not come down to get these things out of his house, and a man in the field must not go back to get his clothes. Woe to pregnant women and nursing mothers in those days. Pray that your escape may not be in winter or on a Sabbath, for at that time there will be a great tribulation, the kind that hasn't taken place from the beginning of the world until now and never will again. Unless those days were limited, no one would survive, but those days will be limited because of the elect. A lot of history here. And if you ever heard that phrase, you ever hear that phrase before? Abomination that causes desolation. You ever hear that, right? There was a boy who grew up about 200 years before Christ. Okay, and his daddy was named Antiochus. And his daddy was Antiochus III. And this is about 200 years before Christ. And this boy inherited his father's kingdom. His father's kingdom was the Seleucid Empire. The Seleucid Empire was the empire that was occupying Jerusalem at the time. Now, Rome was advancing. Okay, we know what's going to happen before Christ comes on the scene. By that time, Rome would occupy it. But Rome was advancing, and at this time, the Seleucid Empire occupied Jerusalem. And this was all part of we've used the word Hellenization here before in church. What it means is, you've got these Jews have these great traditions, okay? And the Greeks, as they started taking over from Alexander the Great and on, there was further Greek influence, Greek religion and paganism creeping into Israel. And many were turned away to that, and there was too much intermingling. Well, this is one of those stories, okay? So Antiochus, he was a guy, I like to make up this part because it just seems this way. He it seemed to be like his daddy fought all the battles for him, so he inherited it. And so he needed to kind of make a name for himself. And so he just did it through propaganda. And so I think I have a coin. Do I have that coin slide on there? Yeah, so here's, he was the first guy. He was the first ruler. I remember at Christmas sometimes I show you the coins that Caesar had minted that would say Caesar is God. He was the first guy to start doing this, propaganda through the coins. And this is one he would do, King Antiochus, image of God, bearer of victory, okay? And so that's what it means in the little scribbly stuff here on the right-hand side. And so he really wanted to put himself out there as a great ruler. But people didn't see him that way, and they tried to overthrow him. And sometimes he'd react really poorly. He'd overreact and just start killing everybody to kind of show, hey, I'm really in control, you know, this kind of thing. And so that kind of thing happened one time. One time he really wanted to make an example of people. And so he decided to order the high priest at the time, okay, Jews are still living there. High priest is Mattathias. Okay, and he orders him to make a sacrifice on their altar in God's temple to the god Zeus. Okay, and the high priest is not going to have any of this. Okay, now at this time you can imagine there's division. Some people think, hey, we got to go along to get along. Some people felt, no, we're being watered down, our religion's being watered down by this paganism coming in. Well, Mattathias was on that side, okay? And he said, no. So the king gave the responsibility to somebody else, another Jew who wasn't even the high priest, and said, you offer the sacrifice. And Mattathias saw this, and he killed them both, okay? And then he ran to the hills with his sons. One of his sons was Judas, Maccabeus. And Judas eventually led a revolt. They were on the run because now war was going to be on. We're going to find out who's really going to be the boss of what happens in Jerusalem. And by the way, all this happened on December 25th of 167 BC. Okay? December 25th. Kislev 25th. December 25th. And so basically 4 years later, after much fighting, Judas led his band of brothers in, and they overthrew the Seleucid army, and they cleared them out, and they repossessed Jerusalem. And on December 25th, 163 BC, they offered the first sacrifice again back to Yahweh, and they were once again in control of their own destiny. And that date was celebrated from then on as the Festival of Lights, but you know it as Hanukkah. Okay? And that's where that whole story that I told you, if you're wondering where that's going, that is the abomination that causes desolation that Jesus is talking about. When Daniel prophesied this kind of thing, well, see, Jesus is talking about something in the future though, right? He's basically saying it's the same thing. When you see the temple defiled again, you will know. You will know what kind of season it is when you see the temple defiled again, okay? And so, it says don't be caught off guard. He says when you see the abomination that causes desolation standing in the holy place, those in Judea must flee to the mountains. Of course, what we know is in AD 70, the temple was destroyed, but I mean, more importantly, Jerusalem was completely invaded and overrun, okay? And so that's what we're sort of talking about here. Jesus, though, is really speaking largely, and where we can kind of wrap our arms around what this means for us is, it can be open-ended. And it's okay to talk about it in this way. We want to make sure that we put Jesus' words in the context of where they're at. But he still has not come back. We're going to get to why in a bit, okay? He still has not come back. And so what we see here is Jesus simply cautioning that while you shouldn't be alarmed of these things, it wouldn't be wise to be completely caught off guard. You should pay attention to what's going on around you. You should pay attention during times of trial in particular. It's really hard for me to give application to this because somehow I got to say, when we're reading about these things, you know, I got on my phone this morning. I was looking at my phone. I get these news alerts and it said, France is about to pick another president. Here's why you should worry. I mean, you know, like that's the kind of headlines we get. I had no idea that was going on. I'm not really hip with the news or anything. But when you got headlines that are telling you, here's why you need to freak out and buy more gold, it's really hard for us to have good application to context of what it means to be not alarmed, but not be caught off guard too. Okay, and so the best I can do is just teach what's in God's Word here. And Jesus says, basically, that not to be alarmed that he's in control, but a wise steward of his own family and his own things is not going to be caught off guard, is going to pay attention to those things around them, know what time and season it is, okay? And to not have those things change us, but for us to take appropriate steps when necessary. Okay, now one more don't, and then we'll get on to some positive stuff, okay? Here's the fifth one, really important. Don't look for signs. Don't look for signs. Verse 23, if anyone tells you, look here is the Messiah, or over here, don't believe it. False messiahs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. Take note, I have told you in advance. So if they tell you, look, he's in the wilderness, don't go out. Look, he's in the inner rooms, don't believe it. For as a lightning comes from the east and flashes as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. I will add to this, in present day, look, I have figured out by counting these things in the Bible, the day and the month and the year, you know, that God is coming back. I mean, anybody who would claim anything like that, okay, these are false teachers. I want to give you this really quick, okay? This topic came up this week, and I think it's really important, and I'm just going to quickly go through this. False teaching, one of the marks of maturity, and I hope that we'll all grow in maturity, is our ability to identify false teachers, okay? So here's seven things that'll help, okay? Number one, false teaching comes from a different source, okay? Where does the message come from? Peter says, now Peter, by the way, in his epistles, writes a lot about false teaching. Okay, so Peter writes, we did not follow cleverly invented stories when we told you about the power and the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ in verse 1:16. And then he says that false teachers exploit you with stories that they've made up in 2 verses 3. So true teachers, a source is what he says for the Bible, from the Bible. And I want to add to that, a true teacher doesn't use the Bible as sort of place setting and then talk about whatever he wants. Okay, good, true teaching doesn't just use, you know, kind of says, today's message is, and reads a verse, closes that up, and then just talks about how to get rich the rest of the time. Okay, that's not, but that's a tactic, though, of a false teacher. Okay, they know that because it would be the tactic of the enemy to deceive believers, And so the one thing they got to do is to buy our trust by giving enough of God's word, the way Satan did in the garden, that we start to listen up, okay? But let's consider as you listen, what's really the source of the arguments that they're actually making? What's really the source, okay? And they're coming up, it's mostly logic, or it's some kind of other, like it'll be some historical events that are happening overseas or something like this, so now you know, and that's the source of their message, okay? It's a different message. For the true teacher, Christ is always central. Christ is the centerpiece of God's teaching, okay? We have everything we need, Peter says in 1:3, for life and godliness in Him. And again, for the false teacher, Jesus is also at the margins. He's kind of like, they might allude to Him, but He's not the source of everything, right? Here's a third thing. I'm just going to go quicker through these. It leaves you in a different position. Peter says in 1:4, the true Christian escapes the corruption in the world caused by evil desires. And he describes a counterfeit Christian by saying they promise freedom while they themselves are slaves of depravity. For a man is a slave to whatever has mastered him. Okay, and so that kind of teaching leaves you in a state of slavery to whatever. And I can see that in some of the false teaching, especially false teaching about, prosperity preaching leaves you in a state of slavery to money. Okay, some of the... end times type guys, they leave you kind of slavery to fear, and God has not given us a spirit of fear. Okay, but here's where the real meat of it is. Okay, it's teaching that leads to a different character, and this is what you need to consider. What kind of character does that teaching produce in you? Does it produce godly character? Does it really produce more godly character, or does it produce more character that's driven from fear? Okay, it's a different appeal. Why should you listen to the message? Today's message, you're going to see the appeal is that God is on the move and we're to join Him in it, okay? Their appeal is going to be very much geared at your desires, fleshly desires, lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, pride of life, your fears, your inadequacies, those kind of things. It's a different appeal. 6, it's a different fruit. What kind of result does it have in people's life in their actions? How do people end up acting when they hear this kind of message? And 7, it's a different end. Where does the message ultimately leave you? When Peter says in 1 and 11, a rich welcome into the eternal kingdom of Jesus Christ our Lord is what waits a believer, while the false believer will experience swift destruction, he says in 1 Peter 2:1. So that's just 7 things to identify false teaching, and we'll probably talk more about that later. So let's go over 2 things we need to remember. That was 5 things we need not to do when preparing for the end of the world. Here's 2 things to remember. 1, you need to know that Jesus is returning. So Jesus then says this, wherever the carcass is, there the vultures will gather. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, he just described all that tribulation, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not shed its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the celestial powers will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the peoples of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. He will send out His angels with a loud trumpet, and they will gather His elect from the four winds from one end of the sky to the other. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. As soon as its branch becomes tender and sprouts leaves, you know that summer is near. In the same way, when you see all these things, recognize that He is near at the door. I assure you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but My words will never pass away. Just to clear up something, I always get confused when I read that, because this generation will not pass away because before all these things take place, right? And the best I can come up with in my study is that this can really include the generation, the age of the church in its entirety. Okay, the age of the church in its entirety. And so that's why the difference there. But what we need to know is simply that Jesus is returning. He says, this is the sign that the Son of Man is returning. That's what you need to know. When you're seeing these things happen, these are the signs that Jesus is returning, that in a sense, it's like He's at the door. Okay, but He kind of then clears up this part. What you'll never know is when Jesus is returning. So in 36, now concerning that day or hour, no one knows. Neither the angels in heaven, nor the Son. Okay? Nor the Son, except the Father only. Now, We don't want to get lost in this, okay? Because this brings up great questions, and they're all fair questions. Did Jesus really not know this stuff when he, at least, maybe he only didn't know it when he was on earth? Maybe he knows it now that he's ascended. I would expect he does, but it says here, not even the Son knows these things, only the Father. Really interesting, right? Well, I think the major point there is for us to realize, if the Son doesn't get to know, then neither do we. That's what it is, okay? It's not for us to get in an endless debate on whether Jesus knows now. It's that obviously what he's saying is nobody knows this, not even me, guys. He's talking to them. Remember, this is all a very long-winded answer to them asking what's going to happen, okay? And so he's basically saying, guys, I don't even know when it's going to happen. Okay, me, the great I am, the bread of life, I don't even know. Before Abraham was, I am, and I don't know, okay? Two claims that Jesus made. And so he says, except the Father only, as the days of Noah were, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. For in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day Noah boarded the ark. They didn't know the flood. They didn't know until the flood came and swept them all away. So this is the way the coming of the Son of Man will be. Then two men will be in the field. One will be taken out and one left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one left. So two kind of opposing points, right? He basically tells them, you'll know when you see these things happening. And then he says, no one knows the day or the hour. And the day or the hour, he's not saying, but they know the seasons, okay? Like, I've heard that so many times. But that's not really the context of what's being said. When he says the day or the hour, that's more of a general description for the time. Nobody knows the time when Jesus is really coming back. That really is the tone of the passage, okay? And it's like, you're going to know, I've told you this, I'm coming back. My evidence to you that I am going to come back is I'm predicting now something that's going to happen in the future, okay? Destruction of the temple, destruction of Jerusalem. You're going to be persecuted. Some of you will even be killed. I'm predicting that's going to happen in your lifetime so that you will know, okay, that the other words I'm saying, but I'm coming back, are also true. Does that make sense? That's kind of what's being said here, okay? So there's, some have said, so the tone of this passage kind of stands against that. God doesn't want us dwelling on a calendar, okay? There are two things God does want us doing. Okay, here it is. Two things you need to do. Number one is to be ready. Jesus says, therefore, be alert, since you don't know what day your Lord is coming. But know this, if the homeowner had known what time the thief was coming, he would have stayed alert and not let his house be broken into. This is why you also must be ready, because the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you don't expect. I think I mentioned the parable of the 10 virgins last week, where five of them took oil for the lamps and five did not. And when the groom came, the ones who didn't have any oil said, hey, give us some oil. And they didn't have oil, so they couldn't get invited to the party. And there are other parables like that to describe this time. That while we don't know when it's going to come, we're to live as if it could happen any day. And so we need to be ready. What does it mean to be ready? It means that we need to be living lives that are honoring to God. It means that we need to be living as if He is already here reigning, because it could happen today. It could happen tomorrow. We don't want to be caught off guard. We want to be caught expecting Him to come. When He comes, we want it to be like, we were wondering when you're going to show up, so we've been preparing. We've been ready. We've been readying ourselves, right? And what does it mean to be preparing? I kind of get ahead of myself. Well, the second thing is this. Be doing the work of God. Be caught doing God's work when He comes back, whenever that day is. Verse 45, who then is a faithful and sensible slave whom his master puts in charge of his household to give them food at a proper time? It's that slave whose master finds him working when he comes that will be rewarded. I assure you, he will put him in charge of all of his possessions. But if the wicked slave says in his heart, my master is delayed, and starts to beat his fellow slaves and eats and drinks with drunkards, that slave's master will come on a day he does not expect and in an hour he does not know. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You know, I'm embarrassed to tell this story, but I certainly had some time as I'm going to fess up. As an adult, I've certainly had time, okay, where I was talking with a coworker, and I make sure sometimes that my desk is angled so that my screen's facing me and not the person coming in the door, you know. And so I'll be talking with a coworker, and I'll see out the window. One of my supervisors coming around, boy, am I down at work when he's coming around. You ever been in that position? Okay, not good. It's not good character. Okay, I wanted to give you something you can actually relate to. I should have taken the easy way out, which was to describe a time when I was a young man and I was working on the farm. And sometimes there was, lulls in between the hay loads that would come in. And those are times you could be cleaning up a bit while you're waiting for the next load to come in. But we didn't do that. We laid on the hay, piece of straw coming out of your mouth. But as soon as we saw the tractor coming around the bend, man, we were getting to work with a pitchfork. You know what I'm saying? And so, listen, that's the exact analogy that's used here. A wicked slave basically says, well, the master's not going to be back for a while. I don't have to work now. He's out of town. And it says a faithful and sensible. You know what a better word for sensible here is? Actually a wise slave. A faithful and wise slave works while his master is gone, taking care of his possessions and preparing for his master to return. And the master will put him in charge of all that he has. So, we're to be caught faithful doing the work of the master. And of course, what is the work of the master? He's left us to reap the harvest of the crop that he's been growing. Us as the church to reap the harvest of the crop that is growing. To be pleading with others. We're still using that passage from Paul. That we're ambassadors for God. As if God was making his appeal through us. Therefore we plead to you on behalf of Christ. Be reconciled to God. That's the work. That's the work of our master. And I want to wrap up and just say this, that Jesus was teaching this whole thing sitting where? You remember now? It's been so long ago. The Mount of Olives. Okay, sitting on the Mount of Olives. And who's he talking to? Just his 12 guys, right? And one of those guys was a guy named Peter. And years later, after Christ had died and ascended, and after many of his own friends, some of those 12, are being persecuted and being killed, Peter, at the end of his life, he writes his second epistle, knowing that he's about to die himself, okay? And he writes it having been on that mountain when Jesus taught this whole teaching that we've just gone through today, and now having seen all these things, and he says this in 2 Peter chapter 3, first be aware of this, that scoffers will come in the last days to scoff, living according to their own desire, saying, where's the promise of his coming? Where is Jesus? He keeps saying he's coming back. And he wants us to know this, the Lord does not delay his promise, as some understand delay, but he's patient with you, not wanting any to perish, but all to come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief. You understand the language here is just what Jesus taught him. On that day, the heavens will pass away with a loud noise. The elements will burn and be dissolved, and the earth and the works will be disclosed. Since all these things are to be destroyed in this way, it is clear what sort of people you should be in holy conduct and godliness as you wait for and earnestly desire the coming of the day of God. And wherever people might scoff and say to us, and it puts us back on our heels, okay, and say to us, you keep saying Jesus is coming back, but it's been 2,000 years, where is he? And it sounds like he's not really on time or something like this. What we understand is God is extending his mercy to a world that is dying. He's extending his mercy. And so for these, however long he extends that mercy, what he desires is for his family to grow. And he desires that, but he's left the work in his infinite wisdom. He left all that work to us. He promised to go with us, okay? But he left it to us. We're to take his message to a fallen world. And that's how we prepare for our king to come back. It's so hard, guys, for me, even as a pastor. I mean, geez, probably harder for me than even most of you guys to really live in the light of eternity. I'm embarrassed about it. It's hard for me. I'm sure it's hard for you to make that more important than what's happening in my home right now. To make that more important than what's happening with the behavior of my kids. you know, to make that more important than my job, my career sometimes. It's really hard to make the idea of this, you know, more real to me and actually start to control and influence my life and my actions. Living in the light of eternity is living with this confident expectation that Jesus is coming back. But that's the challenge before us today. It's not easy. It's not easy, but God invites us to live expectantly believing it. Do we really believe he's coming back? I mean, do we really believe that? You know, we need to have more times where we actually just dream about that maybe, because it just feels like sometimes we're too in the now, doesn't it? My prayer this morning is that every one of us can leave just with a little more glimpse of eternity. I pray that we won't be, when we hear about these things happening, things around the world, we wouldn't find it to be an invitation to draw more inward and more self-centered and be more paranoid, but rather we'd think of it as an invitation to have more urgency to share the message of God, okay? So that's my challenge to you today. Why don't we pray and we'll be dismissed.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to the Lakeside Podcast. If you have any questions at all about the message, if you have any struggles you're going through, or if you simply want to respond to what you've heard, we'd love to hear from you. Go to our website at lakesidelife.org and click on the contact page to let us know what's on your heart. We look forward to hearing from you, and we'll see you next time.